This is FC-75. The counter number is 38.
Don't think it all. Oh, yeah, gotcha.
This is a Torres Straits drum made of wood with, it appears to be a snakeskin head, which has become dried and broken through the years. Cassowary feather trim, it appears. There is a tag attached.
It's a very old label here.
Reads as follows: Torres Straits drum, probably from Saibai Islands, Saibai, from the London Missionary Society's collection. See Sotheby's. No, that's not Sotheby's.
The Society's, is it?
See. No. Loescher's, almost as if it's Loescher's catalog.
Webster's, is it? Webster.
I see. See me? Webster's, yes, catalog 14, number 89. Oldman's catalog 33, number 26.
There was an old break here, but
I know. Yes, there is a small crack down the one side. There is a very old label on it, which I cannot read now. A drum from the
Torres Straits
Island of New Guinea.
Oh.
New Guinea.
Oh,
well, the last two lines are obliterated. I'll have to get a heavy glass on it to see them. The it's wasted. And this almost gives the impression of being face here, doesn't it?
No, it's a crocodile, the whole thing.
The whole thing.
Well, see, it's a crocodile mouth if you put it down that
way. I see.
You see? I've seen some more realistically crocodile than that.
Yes, they have a rattler effect up here. There's a piece of cloth.
Yes.
Tied at the very tip of the crocodile's nose.
This is a very common rattle of New Guinea.
Mm-hmm.
There's nut rattle.
Yes. But,
though I've seen them with the eyes, though.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's meant to be an eye. That is a curious symbol that appears on many of these drums, especially, and I think on wooden things as well, from the Torres Straits.
I see.
I believe it's meant to be a headdress.
I see.
Some kind of a headdress.
The carving is incised, isn't it?
It's beautifully carved, these things, these Torres Straits are finer, far finer work than the New Guinea.
Mm-hmm.
Though they are the type, it's a New Guinea type, of course.
Mm-hmm. It's been mended here in the Aboriginal way.
Yes, it's been mended.
Down at the bottom. Well now, what is the history of your acquiring this?
Well, I simply bought up the anything that the British Museum didn't have, virtually a gift. From the London Missionary. The London Missionary collection, of course, is noted for its unique collection of the early Polynesian idols
in
the Southeast Pacific.
Yes.
But, of course, they had other things collected by Chalmers and other missionaries of New Guinea, Papua generally, and the islands round there, but not so many. Really, in the islands round there, but not so many. Really, in the early days, they acquired these idols, not because they were idols or because they were interesting scientifically, but just to show what the wonderful effect Christianity had upon them.
They were giving
these
up.
Senseless
mm-hmm.
objects of stone and wood.
Mm-hmm.
And they were merely sent over. Most of them were destroyed, of course, by order of the missionaries, or by the enthusiasm of the chief, or most of the priests were not converted. The chiefs were converted. And they had a sudden urge for Christianity. They destroyed everything that wasn't Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And they destroyed all these idols. And a few of the idols were saved by the missionaries to send back to their society to show what Christianity had done for the benighted nation.
Very good. Well,
the missionaries not only destroying their objects wholesale, but destroying all their customs.
Oh, yes.
And anything that kept them fit. Doing away with their dances, their tattooing, their warfare, Well, warfare was necessary in these small islands which were overstocked with people. But what was not necessary was to give them all the European diseases, which annihilated the whole population.
They did a very good job of that.
Mm. And what are the Marquises today? Some of them entirely new to the people at all. I was most surprised to read a book written 2 or 3 years ago, one of my recent buys, and he said that there were 3 people left on these islands where Melville said there were thousands there in his time, warring against one another and keeping perfectly fit in consequence. Directly you did away with warfare, they had no incentive to live. And all they did was to drink, mix with the white sailors and things, and get the diseases, all these European diseases, that wiped them off wholesale. And in some of those islands, he said there wasn't a man left. And in other cases, there were a few decrepit old people eaten up with disease, syphilis and elephantiasis and things which apparently they didn't have before. And he said, in another few years there won't be a soul left on these islands who has had a populated by thousands. Raffle Christianity is done for them, so I haven't much use for the missionaries.
Mm-hmm. When did you purchase this group of things from the missionaries?
When did I do that? Sometime after the First World War, not long. You see, with the London Missionary Collection, I knew Wardour Thompson, who was the president. And I knew far better the Reverend Neville Jones, all clergymen, Dr. Wardour Thompson. He was a DD, clergyman, you see. And Neville Jones was another reverend. And Neville Jones was the secretary. Of course, the two principal people in running the society. I knew them both. Neville Jones was the same school with me, the public school with me. And when I said, asked him about these things, I said, it's a shame that these idols are in the British Museum. They ought to be national property. They're only deposited there. They ought to belong to them. And Neville Jones quite agreed with this. And he said, I'll speak to Wardour Thompson about it. And he did. And he said, well, Wardour Thompson is very much of your opinion. He said, these are such important things. And they're so important to the history of the London, London Missionary Society itself that he thinks they ought to be made national property, no danger for them ever getting out, you see. So between them, these two, sort of pulled the strings, and the council decided with them. But they said they couldn't give the things, actually. And they asked the colossal sum of what do you think? They quite agreed it was purely nominal, but as they had to have funds, and if any of their subscribers heard that they'd given away things, they might not like it. So they had to charge something. So what do you think they charged for that collection? £1,000.
To the British Museum?
The British Museum gave them £1,000. I mean, a single idol would be worth that.
Yes. So after the British Museum did this...
Neville Jones said to me, well, we don't want all this other stuff, you see. Which Joyce went down and shows what he wanted. They had all those idols, they were already deposited, had been deposited there for some 20 years. They originally used to be in the old London Missionary Museum, which I remember well, in the 1890s, in the city. And then they gave up the city and built the big building in Bridge Street. That's near Blackfriars Station. Big building. They owned the whole building. Let off parts of it. Downstairs were their offices and reception places, and their halls for lectures and things, and right on the very top of the building they'd built a museum, the old glass roof. It's quite a nice museum. But nobody ever went to see it. Never went to see these things at all. But they'd never put up in that museum these idols. which Joyce and Reed at that time, Sir Hercules Reed, had induced them to deposit on permanent loan with the British Museum. But it started, well, in their moving from one museum to the other, you see. Mm-hmm. And they induced them to leave them there.
Yes.
They were all put in the case by themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. And they left them there. And that finally was largely owing to me, knowing both this Wardour Thompson and Neville Jones. But that it became permanent. Neville Jones said then, we don't want these things. Joyce, we told Joyce to come down and choose what he's wanted out of the museum, anything else. He found several other idols, which had not been included, not been recognized as idols. And Joyce did recognize them, and took those along too, you see, and took everything he wanted. And then there's a whole heap of things left. Very ill cared for, nobody ever gone to visit the place much, they were all covered with dust and hopeless matter. All the cases had been opened, I suppose, by Joyce, and things roped out and all over the floor. And Jones said to me, Neville Jones, said, look here, would you like to have a picking of anything here? I said, yes, I rather would. Well, he said, I'm proposing that you and Balfour should come along down, because Balfour wants a picking, you see. And he's spoken to Balfour too. Neville Jones was an Oxford man, and so was Balfour, and he knew Balfour in Oxford. And so we two went down there together. We were both great friends, so there's no difficulty about that. And Neville Jones said, well, look here, we don't want these things, you know, but we must sell them. Would you be prepared to give her a shilling for anything that you want? A shilling? Isn't it ludicrous?
Yes.
I mean, when you talk of shillings nowadays...
I know.
So, there was Balfour. I think we had a toss, and one of us got the first toss, you see. And we started. Then the next man had the next choice, you see. So we went on, choice and choice. And we each made a great pile. Everything we wanted was put in verse, my pile was Balfour's pile. And I wrote out with him, I said, I like this. All right, take that. And Balfour has the next choice, and he chooses something else. And so we went on. And then I came across a club and I said, I don't know what this is, I'm going to have this, it'll go in my series of clubs. But I don't place this at a South Street club. Well, what do you think it is, Balfour? Oh, I know what that is. Oh, I should like that, I wish I'd seen that before. So I said, where does it come from? He said, that's a Toto club. So from the Lil Gillies.
Yes, Lil Gillies.
Yes. And I said, well, I didn't know it. Oh, he said, it's a regular Toto club. I should very much like to have one, Pop. So I said, well, you knew what the thing was, I didn't, so you had that, you see.
Yeah.
So he went off for that, he was highly pleased. I said, well, didn't go into my collection. But since then, I've got two others. Well, a very rare one.
From the...
Little Gary's Toto. But I shouldn't have known it if it hadn't been for this.
Well, that's the way we learn.
Huh?
That's the way we learn.
Of course, I learned a heap from Balfour. A man that you would always turn to. He knew everything. Natural historian and everything else. Wonderful lecturer. Splendid English. Fluent. Cultured. And a charming man. Everybody liked Balfour. Dealers and everybody. Pupils. Other professors and everybody. He was a great man.
Sounds like quite a...
Fine presence. Tall, handsome man. A lovely house, plenty of money, everything. Yet this was his hobby.
Never married?
Oh yes, he was married.
Was
yes, he had a wife and a son and a daughter.
Mm.
But they weren't particularly interested as well. And they were all where the chairman's chair stood on a dais, you see. And these things were all in a fan shape. You know how they decorate these
clubs
in the old museums. Mm. Not so many clubs, but sort of flat things. No, the men are on spears, you know, the serrations and all that kind of thing, all that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one club was a very long one, also serrated. Mm-hmm. Extremely rare things. The only other one I knew was the British Museum specimen. And this one, that's all I knew. Since then, Oldman got one.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I know, there are only three now. And then, not so many years, I got a fourth one. But it's rather different. It was obviously the same thing. But show the variation of type.
And these are the long black wood?
They're not too black.
Reddish.
They're rather reddish, you know. They haven't been blackened.
They're serrate.
Yes. Yeah, they're more dentate more. They're rather more poisonous.
Long.
Well, well, it's a very long club. The club is where Somerset had to strike the spears. I don't mean those spear clubs.
Oh, none of
those. Oh, I have a whole lot. Yes, I have a lot there. Oh, yes, they had a lot of those, but those are not rare. Mm. Not compared to this thing.
I see.
Well, anyhow, I said, well, what are you going to do about those? Joyce couldn't take them, because they couldn't take them down. You'd have to have a great long ladder, which they hadn't got. And Joyce wasn't going to any expense. And I said I would, and I'd buy them. You see, Jones said, no, Jones said, well, they're yours, you see. When we take them down, Jones said, no, well, they're yours. I'll let you know when we take them down. As a matter of fact, Neville Jones went out to South Africa. I got him appointed corresponding fellow of the Royal Anthropological. He was going out to South Africa and he said he'd work with the natives. He was not an ethnologist. But he took it up. And he finally gave up his missionary and became curator, founder and curator of the Rhodesian Museum. And was a great expert, the greatest expert, on the Bushman carvings, or drawings rather, and the stone artifacts that are found all over South Africa, you know, that had never been recognised in copy. That was Neville Jones's work. And made very largely from studying my museum here, being really interested. And then getting me these things, you see. And, well, he passed on the information to Chamberlain, who succeeded him as secretary, and said, well, when you get those out, let Fuller know, because they are his, and I leave it to you to settle the price. Well, finally, they were taken down when they gave up the new place and took a third place in Westminster, where they are now. And then, of course, everything had to be taken down, and they did go to the trouble of taking these things down, and they had them down there. And Chamberlain looked and said they were there, and I said, all right, I'll come along. I'll come along and get them, you see, and just settle the price for the council, whatever you want, you see, anything reasonable, I'll pay for. That was that, and then the next I heard was that Neville Jones had come back on a visit from South Africa to report to his missionary of how he was getting on and all this sort of thing, because he was founding missions all over that part of the Zambezi, you see. He was one of the first in. Because, of course, Livingstone had discovered all that part of the country. He hadn't founded missions. He was a discoverer far more than a missionary. But he was a surgeon, of course. And Neville Jones came back to report, and he came down here to see us, like he always did. And he said, you know, I should hurry up about those things that Chamberlain's let you know that last have been brought down. Because I saw Beasley lovingly fingering these things, and, well, you know these are better than I do, but I shouldn't like to leave them too long there. You don't know where they may disappear to. Mm-hmm. Oh, I went up the next day, of course, but that was all. And I said what the Chamberlain said.
So that's the story behind that.
That's the story behind that. And among them was I got these things. And I got that lovely canoe prow thing there, the Trobriand Island thing.
That was about 19 what?
Oh, that was... I should think that must have been about 1933 or 1934. I expect it's on my spears.
Well,
I've never had time to label them, but I expect it's on my spears.
Well,
I've never had time to label them, but I've written on everyone in pencil, London Missionary Society.
That I'll look for.
You see. So for goodness sake, don't rub the things.
I shan't. I must go.
How much, think?
After 5.
Well, that was how that thing came along, you see. Well, then, to finish the other story about this stone thing. When I came back after the First World War, I've had these things in my father's house over Liberty, and I was, things were a bit dusty. First of all, you see, I was out on active service there for some 6-7 years. It was right through the war long afterwards. Until I was invalided out, you see. And these things never been dusted, and nobody went into my museum there any more than they did here. My father used to add, because he went on adding ones. But he never interfered with my things. And I was cleaning up a bit one day, and I took this stone down off a shelf. It was out in the open there. And I found this round label, exhibition label, missing. And I had my old label, which is still on, saying that I think this must be a religious object, as it came and so on and so forth. I acquired it. And what do you think was under that label? The old green label, which gave the clue to the catalogue.
I see.
They'd stuck this exhibition label on it.
I see. Right on the top.
That had come off, and the green label was still there, and it's still on it.
I see.
You see. And there it gives it. If you look at number 13 in the catalogue, it'll give you the history of this thing. And it was one of the sacred idols of the King of Tahiti, kept in the east part of the island, or whichever part it was, east or west or something. And the silly tradition was attached to it, that if you, fisherman's god, I think it said or something, I'm not sure if it gives its name or not, but a silly fable is attached to it, that if you throw this idol, this stone, into the water, it will swim back to land. That's in the catalogue. It gives the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not the end of it. About 3 or 4 years ago, when Archie was over here in Auckland, we were looking through these things, and I said, well, this is an interesting history. I'll show you this thing. I've always been intrigued as to what it can be. It's an idol, but why should there be an idol of this shape? I know nothing from this house that's like that. I said it's partly natural stone, but it's got human workmanship on it, but it's so old that it's all smoothed off. This body was here, yeah? And we were looking at it, and I said, I can't make out what the thing is at all, why they should choose such a shape. I suppose it's a curious stone, and they took it up, you know, like natives do. And he looked at it and he said, do you know what it reminds me of? It's like he'd been looking at my fish hooks. He said that doesn't it look like a barb of a fish hook? That what it is, said Archie, you've got it. That what it is. It not only looks like it, but it is that. It's a giant god fish hook, which no doubt had its shank about so big of a great piece of wood, and this great stone fish hook at the barb thing, you see? At the end, and I've no doubt they used a light piece of wood, so if they threw it in the water, they would follow a little string which they could pull it to earth, you see, the priest. And the natives thought, of course, this thing was coming to land. It was floating on its shaft. Itself couldn't float, of course not.
I see.
And no doubt itself couldn't float, of course not.
I see.
And no doubt it was a sea god of some kind.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting story.
Isn't it?
Yes.
Well, that thing I've always said ought to go to the British Museum, but as I've been treated as I have, well, it's going to you. Mm-hmm. But that is always a piece. When other people have said, well, I said, you'll never have that piece, because that obviously ought to be the items of the British Museum.
And that's one of them. Well, that's quite a story.
Yeah. But now, will pick out that old stone?
Nobody will.
Of course they will. One of the most priceless things we have.
Yeah.
Historically.
Mm-hmm.
They won't know, because if I advertise it like you, you'd choose that as one of the first things. You'd stop that going out of the country and right there. But I'm not going to say it. It's not my business to stop it.
Mm-hmm.
It's my business to see that you get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's quite a story. And if that label hadn't come off...
I know.
They never would have known.
No, but then I can go further than that. Now that I've proved that, I bought some other things. Three other staves, about as long as that. Just reddish wood.
About a yard long.
Yes, about a yard long. That's not quite so long. And they're carved in a way, not left sort of. This part, the shank is round, while the two ends are square, and therefore it forms a sort of collar round with the square starts, you know, that type of thing. And those were three of I've got, of my shillings worth in my time. And I said, I said, you know, that's got some religious meaning. I'm perfectly positive. Why should they keep these things? They're not clubs, they're nothing that we know. Well, I kept those, and I go through the catalogue, there was no label on those, and I came to the conclusion that they were Samoan gods. And that's borne out by the fact that the British Museum have some, with the labels on, very much like them. Not the same, about the same length, but not the same shape. They're different designs. Minor differences. Quite simple designs, no carving like chip carving or anything like that on, you know. Just shape. Different shape, I would call them. And those are idols or some religious sticks of some kind, and these are too, but there's no proof of it. But they do mention in the catalogue having such staples. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt those are the ones with their labels lost. Mm-hmm. And now we know this other one was found out like that, but he's the same, but no label on. Mm-hmm. I've no doubt at all they are. There are some are.
You only have to follow these things, though, to find out.
I know. Well, those labels are all on. I recorded this.
Good. Well, that's good to know.
That and the London Missionary, the one we did yesterday, the Trobriand Island one, I got at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Just a moment.